In the late 70s, Jean Owl was an unknown writer with a weird idea for a novel. She dreamed up a story set 30,000 years ago of a Cro-Magnon woman trying to survive in the Ice Age. That book became The Clan of the Cave Bear. It went on to sell more than 10 million copies around the world. Owl wrote several more books about her heroine, Ayla. Each one became a huge bestseller. And it's happened again with The Shelters of Stone. It is clear that Jean Owl has a vivid imagination, but she grounds her novels in the latest scientific findings. In fact, she loves to hang out with archaeologists. She bounces her theories off of them. Sometimes they send her their unpublished papers. Owl told Anne Strangechamps that the ancient people she writes about were a lot like us.
They were at that time already anatomically and fully developed modern humans. And of course, when they moved into Ice Age Europe, there was another kind of human already living there, the ones that we know of as Neanderthals. And so this is the transitional period between these two different kinds of people. And of course, the Neanderthals were not dumb savages any more than the Cro-Magnon were. We think of the Cro-Magnon caveman, but I will tell you, if you see some of the beautiful work that they did and you look at their anatomically modern skeletons, you know that they were just as human as we are and had the same kinds of feelings and emotions and so on.
You do a ton of research. There's just a ton that goes into your books. For instance, I read that when you were researching early horses, you even tracked down a woman who's trying to breed backwards from wild horses to figure out what the first horses were like.
Yes, as a matter of fact, then it's very interesting because we did go to visit her a couple of times. But she's been taking basically the wild horses that are kind of running around eastern Oregon. And she worked with a guy, first of all, and she's been working with this herd that she's got for about 40 years, I think. And the interesting thing is that it's not one thing that changes. You know, you keep selecting for the most primitive traits, for the earliest traits, and you don't get just one thing. You get a suite of characteristics.
So what changes?
Well, for example, with her horses, they cannot stand dogs. They really cannot stand dogs. I mean, to them, dogs are wolves and wolves are predators. Their hooves are so hard, they don't need horseshoes. Their hooves are naturally so hard, they can go over stone.
Tell me about some of the other kind of hands-on research you've done for these books. I've read amazing stories. I mean, that you've tanned your own animal hides.
Well, I took a class called Aboriginal Life Skills, and this was a class that wasn't about how to survive until somebody comes to save you. It was how did people live in that landscape, and this is in eastern Oregon, which is, you think of Oregon as being green. I will tell you, eastern Oregon is high desert. It's really pretty barren. And when I first went out there, I thought, how could people, because, you know, the Paiutes used to live there, and how could people live in this environment? Well, the guy who was giving the class had several dried hides that had been, you know, waiting. And so we got them all wet again and we prepared the hides. We scraped off the hair and we scraped off the inner skin and the fat, got it all prepared. And then, of course, he'd saved the brains because that's what you do. You brain tan them, okay? And he defrosted them. So here we are, squishing. Now, this is a nice anachronism, squishing deer brains in the bottom of a plastic bucket, right? And everybody's going, yuck, you know, ooh. And then, you know, we did it, and we got it all mushed up, you know, and then we added a little water to it, and then we added these prepared hides. And suddenly, everybody who was going, yuck, was saying, oh, my gosh, come here, feel this. Because you could feel that material change in your hands. It makes the softest, most velvety, beautiful feeling material that feels wonderful to wear.
Didn't it make you wonder who first thought or how
yes.
this happened, that somebody
oh,
first
yes,
thought of
Anne,
using a
absolutely.
Brain?
I think somebody must have been sheer genius to figure it out in the first place, you know?
You've kept doing this kind of thing and asking that kind of question. You know, I wonder how or wonder who
oh,
did
yes,
this the first time.
Yes, and I mean, then I try to figure it out. And maybe I get clues and then maybe I write about it.
How real is this world in your mind? I mean, if you close your eyes, is it like you have a picture, a movie in your mind?
Well, when I write, I tend to write with my eyes closed. I tend to imagine, you know, when it's a good thing I can touch type. And particularly, for example, when I go to France and I'm at the actual sites, and you kind of have to imagine what it was like before the farms and the houses and all of those kinds of things were there. You know, when you're inside a cave, you don't have to imagine too much, because inside of the cave is where they put the paintings. They didn't live inside caves. I mean, inside a cave, it's cold and damp and dark. You know, there's nothing darker than the inside of a cave. You want to be where there's some sun, so you tended to either be in the mouths of caves, oftentimes quite big caves, or, as in this particular case, the shelters of stone. These are very unique kind of shelters. They're in the cliffs of these deep river valleys and, you know, rolling landscape.
So when you visit these places, I mean, what's it like for you? You've written so much about these early humans as though, you know, they're real to you. And you stand in places where they really, people like this really lived.
It's almost like a mystery in the sense of taking all the various clues and then putting them together and trying to create an entire world. And I have gotten a tremendously positive response from the archaeological community. I will tell you, I was kind of surprised myself. Last summer, I went to Spain for the first time. I saw Altamira, which is another one of these beautiful examples of painted caves. And I was told by one of the tour guides that a requirement for employment to be a guide at Altamira Cave is to first read my books.
Huh.
So I'm saying, woo. No. But it's because the director wants the guides to understand that these people were people. You know, it's so much easier for us to want to believe what the scientist of 1900 thought rather than what the scientist of 2000 thinks.
Well, to think of them as kind of like apes, I guess, and to think of them, therefore, as, you know, sort of minds we couldn't possibly understand.
Let me give you kind of one of the examples, you know, that's a good one to use. It's from the Clan of the Cave Bear. And, you know, I had this old man with a crippled arm idea sort of thing, and one of the second books that I read was about a dig in Iraq by Drs. Ralph and Rose Selecki at a place called Shanidar Cave. And they reached Neanderthal levels, and the first skeleton they found was of an old man who had died in a rock fall. And when they examined him, they realized that the damage to the eye socket and so on and the subsequent rehealing made them know that he was probably blind in one eye. They knew from the atrophy of the bone that he had probably walked with a limp. They knew that his arm had been amputated, and that wasn't broken off. It was cleanly amputated. So first of all, my thought is, there's my old man with the crippled arm. So the character of Kreb in the Clan of the Cave Bear really existed. There was an old Neanderthal man who looked like him. But then, of course, I have to start asking questions like, you know, how did a Neanderthal who was half-blind, one-armed, and lame live to be an old man? Well, it means maybe that their society took care of their weak and their old and their wounded. And if you think about, you know, he was probably lame from a young age, who would take care of a crippled kid? You know, well, maybe somebody who loved him.
One thing you can't find in the archaeological record is much information about language abilities. But that's a really interesting part of your series.
Well, they can find some. Actually, it was Lieberman at Brown University. And he was the one who came up, was the first one to come up with the theory that he did not think that Neanderthals were able to make fully articulate speech. Not that they couldn't speak some, not that they couldn't make sounds, but that it wasn't as articulate as the kind of speech that we make. So, of course, that then gave me an interesting kind of difference, something to, because, you know, before I ever could invent a Neanderthal character, I had to invent Neanderthals, you know. And it was very interesting because when I decided that I was going to, you know, I mean, I knew from what I had read of the culture that, I mean, here they are compassionate, caring, they bury their dead, they must have a rich social life. You know, they're able to survive through two ice ages, you know. I mean, these are not dummies. And they actually have a cranial capacity bigger than ours. Hmm. It's shaped a little differently, you know. But, you know, this average cranial capacity of modern humans today is 1,400 cubic centimeters. This man with the crippled arm, his cranial capacity was 1,700 cubic centimeters.
And that leads to this suggestion through some of your characters that they may have had kinds of intelligence, forms of intelligence that we don't have anymore, that have kind of died out.
I don't think they were so much less developed. I think they were differently developed. And so I tried to come up with some of the ways that they might have been differently developed.
What kinds of intelligence would they have that we don't?
I can look at what we have, what we have from the artifacts, and there's two things that I think show the difference between the two. Number one, while the Neanderthal may have painted their bodies or leather or something soft, they left no physical record of any art. And that's the one thing that we have brought, that modern humans brought with them. Somehow, we were the ones who invented art. Well, I mean, when I hear of schools wanting to cut out art programs, I want to scream because I'm saying, look, I mean, that's one of the defining characteristics. That's who we are, is that creative drive. But the other thing that I find so interesting is that I was talking to one of the French archaeologists a couple weeks ago. There's a site, for example, that he's dug in France called La Macaque, and he can find the kinds of tools that Neanderthals used 300,000 years ago, maybe even as long as 400,000 years ago, but at least 300,000 years ago. And they were still using those same tools 50,000 years ago. That's 250,000 years worth of the same kinds of things that they were doing. All of a sudden, modern humans moved into what is now Europe, what was then Ice Age Europe, and that was maybe between 35 and 40,000 years ago. So 40,000 years ago, here we are, and we're Stone Age. We're using stone tools. 40,000 years later, we're Space Age. You know, so where they stayed the same for this long, long period of time, the things that we do is keep inventing, keep changing, keep being new. That's a profound difference.
Jean Owl, talking with Anstrain Champs. The Shelters of Stone is the latest novel in the Earth's Children series.